This is intended to be a fun session, and
you see, you got good victory.
We want a lot of, we want a lot of participation from everybody here, and I hope you've thought about some of the remedies and things that you've learned through life. I'm John Collins, and I'm a physician from Spokane, Washington, and so I run into a lot of these remedies from time to time, and have to work around them and through them at times, and some of them I really believe are effective, and so I do pass them on to patients from time to time. And Midge is my right hand here, and she sits home and reads out of the old books and tells me what I should have done. We have these two books which were passed down through our family. This one came from my family. It's Gunn's New Family Physician, published in 1869. And it really has some very interesting things in here, and I enjoy every so often getting it down and looking at various treatments for disorders that we treat nowadays and think about it. Some of the old treatments were right on the ball. They used preparations which did contain actually active medications which we now use nowadays. A good example of that is digitalis, which is derived from the foxglove plant. Some of the older physicians around still are using the old digitalis leaf preparation, which is very difficult to use in my experience. It's hard to regulate, and I'm presently using the much more purified preparation called digoxin or digitoxin, but I thought it'd be interesting to read a little bit what it says here about digitalis and what it's for, and they were right on the ball. Here. It says it is a sedative diuretic and is most serviceable in cases of hydrothorax or dropsy of the chest connected with diseases of the heart or kidney. The disease of dropsy in the old literature was usually congestive heart failure. So they were right on the button there. It is also used for palpitations of the heart in severe inflammatory fevers, mania, epilepsy, and spasmodic asthma. It must always be used with great care and symptoms closely watched. Whenever its effects begin fully to appear, it should be stopped. And they talk about the fact that if you overdose with this thing, you develop vomiting, purging, extreme prostration, slow and feeble pulse, delirium, convulsions, and death. And those are what we call the toxic effects of digitalis, which we constantly look for in our patients and try and pick them up at the early stage when they're just having nausea and vomiting and long before they get to the coma and death stage. So this is one of the preparations which is still in use, which came from the old days. I still occasionally see a patient come in with a copper band on their wrist or their ankle, which is one of the old-time treatments for arthritis, which they mention in here. And they have a lot of other treatments for arthritis. Probably the most favorite one seemed to be probably 99% alcohol. I think it was the alcohol that was doing the job and not the other potions that they had in it. They also did, which I was surprised when I was reading through it in here, mention acupuncture as a treatment for arthritis, even back in that day, which is... says the effect of acupuncture needles in curing muscular and nervous rheumatism, such as sciatica, is sometimes almost magical. But just think what the improvements of the present age are when by the simple introduction of a needle into the substance of the body, it acts so as almost instantaneously to remove a most painful affliction. We must therefore conclude by saying that the use of electric or galvanic applications for the cure of chronic rheumatism may be more or less useful in a variety of cases, as they are now used extensively with many beneficial effects. So they were ahead of their time back in that day, maybe also. I'll let you.
Well, in looking over, well, first of all, I've got a different book than he does. The maternal side of my family was evidently raised or reared to the tune of this delicate little book called Maiden, Wife, and Mother. This was for the ladies around the turn of the century. and it deals, well, specifically with medical issues that concern delicate womanhood. And it, you know, it goes through all the stages, virginity, through the matron and to the mother. We found that in, you know, John and I really, you know, some people value the family Bible. Well, we figure, along with the family Bible, that a lot of what we owe our existence to is probably in the pages of these books. And I shudder to think, you know, well, we survived all of these remedies and cures and this strange way of looking at health, or what we consider strange now. And here we are today, in spite of them, I guess. We found that there were some very imaginative things attributed to some ailments that are common to us today. One of the biggies back then was constipation. Well, you know,
it's still big today.
So we thought we'd get right into constipation. All right. So this book, which is written by a woman, very delicately deals with the subject of constipation, and it's even sort of aimed toward the woman. She says, habitual neglect of the bowels is one of the most frequent causes of constipation. The rectum is naturally empty. As soon as the feces are discharged into it, there is usually a desire to relieve the bowels. If this is not done at once, or if neglected for a short time, the feces are carried upward by peristaltic motion and back into the colon, and the desire for evacuation thus passes. Ever heard it described that way? This abuse, long continued, causes the bowels to become clogged up. I love that. In all this delicate language, clogged up, right to the point, you know? They lose their contractile power, the sensibility is destroyed, and in time the natural desire to relieve them will not be felt. This allows an accumulation which distends the rectum and even the colon far beyond its natural capacity. The rectum, in its enlarged condition, presses against the womb, my goodness, causing debility and almost certain disease of that organ. In case of pregnancy, piles follow as a necessary consequence of pressure on the hemorrhoidal veins, or that isn't what it is. Yes, it is. Okay, these medical terms throw me. Bearing down pains, pains in the back, flatulence, colic, swelling of the veins of the legs, headache, sleeplessness, miscarriage, and many other diseases are the result of over-distension of the bowel. Among women, this habit of neglect is almost universal. An evacuation of the bowels is looked upon as an onerous duty, avoided as long as possible, and then performed in a hurried and imperfect manner. Women who are occupied in stores, offices, or factories, where they are surrounded by men, often, through a sense of false modesty, fail to heed the demands of nature. The inconvenient, this is what she attributes it to. The inconvenient and often dangerous closet accommodations, you know, the little outhouse out back, usually provided in the country in smaller towns, tend to increase the natural aversion to promptly heed the demands of nature. I can understand that. This is usually placed some distance from the house and constructed so openly as to expose the inmates to the rain in summer and the snow and ice in winter. During the monthly period, such exposure is exceedingly dangerous, and it is little wonder that the sensitive or invalid woman dreads the ordeal and defers the same as long as possible. You better believe it. Earth closets should be constructed to take the place of the accommodations now so common. These can be made at a trifling cost. Now listen to this. This really, you gotta be thankful for flush toilets. The outhouse may be built close against the dwelling, or a convenient corner in a warm woodshed may be utilized for this purpose. Beneath the seat, a large galvanized pail should be placed, the bottom of which should be well covered with ashes or dry dirt. After using the closet, a supply of ashes or dirt, which may be kept in a convenient place and handled by means of a small shovel, should be added to the contents of the pail. The latter should be emptied and thoroughly cleansed daily. When these directions are carried out, such a closet may be placed near or even in a house with perfect safety. Some of the remedies for constipation, well, most of them are preventative. Diets, you know, the diet is watched and so on. Certain foods should be avoided. Plenty of exercise and plenty of relaxation. She does give some exercises for constipation. And I thought it would be fun if we all stood up and do some constipation exercises. So everybody up, come on. I hope you can see me. Can you see me if I get back here?
Yep.
This is very important. Okay.
This is for
men and women. Okay. All right. Don't be a rush on the toilet tonight, folks. Okay, first, you stretch so that your abdomen is nice and firm. Okay, you put one hand on one side of your abdomen, feel all the good stuff in there, and you put the other hand on the other side of your abdomen. Now what you do is you kind of shake the bowel, you know, up and down, jiggle. Come on, you. You're better already, aren't you? Okay. You'll remember me for this for the rest of your life. You'll be grateful. Just wait and see.
Is the taping system on?
Yeah. Here's the second one. Okay. Now, you gotta be sure you got a good firm grip down there with the old muscles. And then you... Oh, yeah!
Is there a doctor in the house?
The shaking and the pounding don't work, folks. We've got another one for you. This is the kneading, you know. I hope the kitchen crew is here, the bread-making crew. They ought to be really good at the constipation knead. Now, what you do is you make good, hard fists, you see, and you kind of let everything go flabby this time. And you knead around until you get everything, you know, ready to move. All right, okay. Say you heard it here.
For anybody that needs to, the bathroom is right back here.
Oh, but there is a last resort, and we must have that. If that doesn't work, I've lost my page? Oh, that can't happen. Okay, we do have another remedy. The use of a cold, wet compress will in many cases prove beneficial. A napkin should be doubled, and when she says napkin, she means napkin, should be doubled several times so as to make a thick compress, and at the same time large enough to cover the whole of the bowel. This should be wrung out of cold water, placed upon the abdomen, and kept in place by a strip of dry flannel cloth. It should be applied upon going to bed and should be worn through the night. And if that isn't enough to limit the number of your offspring, which is how she describes birth control, then she recommends that she has a word for husbands. After all, you know, we don't appreciate in this day and age how simple it is to regulate the size of our families. And in those days, you can see why families were large when you consider that the only means was self-control. Okay. Oh dear, I've lost my place. The main information that she gives as far as limiting the number of children is that the husband will just simply have to control, she says in no uncertain terms, his animal passions. And if he can't get a control on his animal passions, then he and his wife certainly ought to consider sleeping in separate chambers. There's so much for the evils of constipation and so on. There is another evil that lurks back before the turn of the century and maybe even a little bit beyond that. I want you to, you know, try to guess on this one. You're going to make the diagnosis. I'm going to read the description of the disease. These are the indications. There are various other evidences of this vice which may readily be detected by anyone who is at all expert in such things or who has read a little on the subject. The health, for instance, soon becomes impaired. There will be a general debility, a slowness of growth, weakness in the lower limbs, nervousness and unsteadiness of the hands, loss of memory, forgetfulness and inability to study or learn, a restless disposition, weak eyes and loss of sight, headache, inability to sleep, or wakefulness. Next comes sore eyes, blindness, stupidity, consumption, spinal affection, emaciation, involuntary seminal emissions, loss of all energy or spirit, insanity, and idiocy. The hopeless ruin of both body and mind. These latter results do not always follow, nor even in a majority of cases. Yet they, or some of them, do often occur as the direct consequences of the pernicious habit. While in all cases, and in proportion to the extent of the indulgence, the general health is affected and the mind more or less injured. On feeble constitutions, the effects of the vice are more marked, and the breaking down and ruin of the general body of both, the general health of both body and mind occur earlier and more rapidly than in persons with naturally sound and robust constitutions. But no physical system, no matter how sound and robust it may be, can long withstand the vice, but must sooner or later give way and break down.
What is it?
Masturbation. We've come a long way, Susan.
Maybe some of you remember a year or so ago it was in vogue to time your intercourse according to what sex of child you want. I could never remember whether it was early in the month that the child was conceived, it was a boy, or whether it was a girl. For a long time there's been thought to be a lot of influences on what sex of child you got, and I can well remember one of my patients in Houston, when I was examining her, I noticed that she had a piece of scotch tape over her navel. We were talking about navels early today, weren't we? And I looked at it closely. She had two raisins taped in there. And she was pregnant. And I asked her what the meaning of this was. And this was to influence things so that she would have a male child. And I bet you can't guess what the two raisins represented. That's really true.
What did she have?
I don't know. Never saw her again.
Twins.
They have a chapter in here called Prenatal Influence and Culture, and they tell how to produce a poet or a philanthropist, and how to mold the unborn child,
four reasons,
how to develop culture before birth, power of mind over matter. And I'd like to read you, like begets like. Everyone can readily understand that any oft-repeated exercise of muscle or of mental faculty tends to develop and strengthen such muscle or faculty. It does this in the mother, and if the law of fetal molding has been correctly stated, it must have the same effect through the mother upon the embryo. For example, if the mother, at the proper stage in pregnancy, takes care to exercise her own muscles freely by walking, by light gymnastics, by bathing, etc., the probabilities are, other things being favorable, that she will thereby not only improve her own health, but at the same time confer upon her child a vigorous muscular system. If she at the proper time exercises her mind somewhat persistently in reckoning or calculating numbers, she will thereby increase her own arithmetical faculty and simultaneously increase the molecular deposits in that part of the fetal brain which is the organ of calculation, according to modern phrenology. At all events, will be likely to confer upon her child the power to become a good arithmetician. If the mother spends any considerable portion of her time in philosophic study or thought in efforts to understand the whys and the wherefores of things, she thereby exercises and expands her own cause-discerning facility and ensures its activity in her offspring also. So she practices thoughtful and unselfish kindness towards those about her and is benevolent to the needy and suffering. She instants the same noble traits upon the unborn. And if she is at all times firmly adheres to the right because it is right, she keeps her own conscience ever clear and imparts to the coming one that priceless quality, conscientiousness, so of all other faculties. So they had some influences. Why don't we throw it open for a minute, and maybe some of you have some old home remedies and things that you'd like to pass on to us at all.
That thing about birth control, there's an old textbook that I was reading that was about 1880 or so, and the recommended method for the rhythm type of birth control at that time was that one was to avoid intercourse at the time of menses, and they could have intercourse between the menstrual periods was okay, and that was the rhythm method.
Oh dear.
My grandmother still firmly believes in treating colds with a little whiskey and a little honey and lemon juice.
Yes.
Well,
as good as
a lot of whiskey.
Could I just tell you an experience I had with that one? Being totally unfamiliar with whiskey, I just don't drink it, I don't like it, I don't even like Cokes. But I had a terrible cold one day, and one of the teachers in school said, "Say, you know what you ought to do?" And I said, "What?" And he said, "Go home and take a glass and fill it half full of whiskey and fill it up with hot water and some sugar and take a hot bath and go to bed." So I did. Well, my husband came home about 2 hours later, and I tell you, I must have been just exactly dead drunk.
Anybody ever hear of tea bags on open wounds?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That works real well. It's tannic acid. I frequently have recommended that to people. Especially if you have a tooth pulled and it's bleeding, you can chew on a tea bag and that will stop the bleeding. Or or you can.
They used to use the tea for burns too, and they used to use the factory.
How about bright brown paper bags? Does the sulfur do anything for
them? I don't know. That's the first I've ever heard of that.
Oh.
I don't know.
Tell us about it.
Well, I don't know. My wife's mother says if you get a cut or something, just rip off a brown paper bag and wrap it around your finger, and it seems to work. I don't know whether it's the pressure from holding the bag. It does seem to work.
That's from Jack and Jill, vinegar and brown paper.
I think the older ones have heard of it as Fetidy bags around the neck.
Yes,
I've seen prevent those. Cold.
Mm-hmm. John has a patient come in every once in a while who's, you know, done the whole thing.
Uh-huh. What is
the bag? What do they have in it usually?
I don't know. I've seen all kinds of things.
They smell vile. We always said that was the reason they didn't get cold. No one got near them.
Mary mentioned turpentine. I mean kerosene. Well, turpentine was used too. And he's gone through in Vegetable Materia Medica is the name of the chapter, and he describes a whole lot of just, you know, remedies with things that you would have around the house. Turpentine, known generally by the common name of spirits of turpentine, obtained from the pitch pine of the southern states, distilled from the gum turpentine which exudes from those trees. Okay, this is what it's used for. Turpentine is an irritant and stimulant diuretic. Also, I can't even read this, it's also a cathartic. In large doses, it will operate on the bowels, you better believe it, folks, but more powerfully on the kidneys and the urinary organs. In doses of 20 to 30 drops, it acts strongly on the kidneys, causing a copious flow of urine. It is a good remedy to dislodge and expel worms, and may be given to children for this purpose in doses of half to a teaspoonful in molasses.
What kinds of things have you run into to deal with umbilical hernia?
You tell me about something.
Well, the coins, tape.
The coin, the tape coin is the most common one. They're splint, yeah.
I guess warts are the ones that have the craziest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I haven't run across that yet.
I need some help.
Well, we'll look it up for you. Come see us after the session.
There's some turpentine.
There must be something in there for warts. Oh, there are. Okay, to remove.
There are lots of things for warts. Burying things at midnight in the garden and doing all kinds of things I've heard for taking care of warts.
Yeah.
I think they work as well as some of the new modern day preparations also that we use for warts.
My mother used to put milk in my eyes when they were bloodshot as a kid, or cream.
Huh?
I don't know, it was a soothing effect. Couldn't see, I can't see within this eye without contact lenses now, but I just... I get out of the chlorine pool and she'd put cream in my eyes.
I'll always remember my dear mother, because I was born with a hollowed out chest, I have a congenital deformity here, I had to take castor oil. Or not, was it castor oil or was it fish cod liver oil? I took cod liver oil for years.
Well, my son has the same Pepis excavatum?
Right.
Cod liver oil, okay.
It doesn't work.
Oh, it doesn't work.
Still got it.
Okay, he has too.
Something with that.
Remember witch hazel?
Which one?
She's in here. Known also in some places as winter bloom, spotted alder, and snapping hazelnut. It's a small crooked bush from five... Remember witch hazel?
Which
Which one?
She's in here. Known also in some places as winter bloom, spotted alder, and snapping hazelnut. It's a small crooked bush from 5 to 10 feet high with smooth grayish bark, leaves alternate, oval-shaped, 3 to 5 inches long with numerous raised spots on the underside. Okay, the stuff evidently comes from the pods and the seeds. You were expected to make your own stuff, but he doesn't give the recipe here. But John says that witch hazel is still
used nowadays.
Used.
It's very common over-the-counter preparation called Tucks, which is just great for hemorrhoids. T-U-C-K-S, and those of you who've had babies recently know that the hospitals usually dispense it also to use where the incision was made for allowing for delivery of the baby, and it's very good for use there. Relieves the stinging and irritation in the area, so it's one of the things that still is used nowadays.
Still goes by that name?
Yeah, well, it is witch hazel. Mm-hmm. We don't, don't dispense it like that, tell them it's witch hazel, but it's called Tux.
Mm-hmm. Copper witch hazel compresses, some of the older OBGYN people are saying.
Mm-hmm. Still using some of that.
It's also recommended here as a gargle and mouthwash.
Well, my mother used to use it on her face. It was very, sort of oily preparation.
Did anybody have to sleep with onions on their chest?
Out of your plastic
chest so many times. The one I didn't grow green.
What for?
That was treatment for colds. For colds?
Fry onions and put them on my chest.
Okay. Fry
say the first time he tried it, he was married.
Oh, I didn't get married that early.
The trouble was she cried.
But the other thing came down here and then put hot on it, and all the fumes came up. Well, you could breathe like she never.
Cry a lot, too.
One of the diseases, the old time diseases were called Bright's disease, and I think we now call it glomerulonephritis. Is that the same one? Here's an interesting treatment for Bright's disease. Cure number 2, it's called. Get a good syringe, and upon retiring at night, inject into the bowels a half pint of pure, soft, warm, lukewarm water. Hold this overnight. Upon not done yet. This is what was prescribed back in that day. Upon rising in the morning, take 2 quarts more and hold as long as possible. This will cure Bright's disease if continued faithfully and will ensure old age with a bright eye and a mind to perceive it.
It's funny what the things that they attribute some of the diseases to. Consumption, of course, was a biggie at that time.
Congestive heart failure.
But wasn't then recognized as congestive heart failure, but is now. It says the death by TB.
No, not
that TB.
Dropsy was congestive heart failure.
Yeah.
Consumption was kind of a big ball of diseases. We think maybe cancer was one of the things that was in there. Consumption.
I thought it was TB. Yeah,
it was TB.
And TB, yeah, TB. Yeah, I think it was mostly TB. Yeah.
This is what Dr. Gunn attributes it to. I love that name, Dr. Gunn. Wow. Okay. The deaths by consumption in New York for the year 1845 amounted to 16,000. The medical journal, alluding to the subject, expresses the opinion that nearly one half of all cases of consumption are produced by unnecessary exposure, by breathing the impure air of badly or imperfectly ventilated and crowded public buildings, or by sleeping in overheated or overcold apartments, also badly ventilated. This is no doubt true. It should also have been added two more causes in this country: wearing tight corsets and thin shoes. Warning after warning has been given. Admonitions have been uttered from the pulpit, through the press, and by medical men, but all in vain. Corsets and thin shoes still rank too high among the fashionable requisites of the day, and as a consequence, coughs, colds, and consumptions abound. He really comes down hard on city life as being poor for health. And he says, and I would imagine this is true, that in New York, at this time in New York City, the life expectancy was 25 years. Well, that's amazing. But he compares that with Philadelphia, where the life expectancy was 50% more than that. And here is one of the reasons that he gives for that. One of the reasons is to be found in the structure of the houses. In Philadelphia, the dining rooms are on the level of the street. But in New York City, where it is the almost universal rule to eat in the basement, an immense amount of labor and effort is required to ascend and descend, especially on the part of the aged. It would be an interesting task for some mathematician to compute the number of hours consumed and the number of miles traveled in New York every day in ascending and descending the stairs to their meal.
Have you heard the saying about consumption? TB or not TB, that is congestion. Something done about it, a cough.
I think Mitch made a point that I think is very interesting. Back at the turn of the century, the average person in the United States was only living to around 25 to 30 years of age. And when you consider what our mortality and life living figures are today, the big jump, of course, came with the discovery of antibiotics, and we had a tremendous jump then in our life expectancy up into the 50s, and then our progression in medicine since that time has added on. And they really feel that even if we conquer cancer nowadays, that it won't add that much to the longevity of persons, maybe a year or two at the most.
John, isn't it true that since the turn of the century, the life expectancy for men has only gone up something like 6 months? But it's because of the life expectancy for women due to the maternal death rate decreasing that the general life expectancy has gone up.
For men, those who live, but men have lived longer than women until this century.
I'm not sure whether it's true or not. It sounds good.
Well, generally, people, once you got past around age 10 or so, your life expectancy is just about the same as it is nowadays. It's just most of the advances have been made in caring for the children so that they don't die so young. It's fun. Well, it's interesting anyway to go to some cemeteries and you're looking. You can see when sicknesses and illnesses hit a town, the small towns. There'll be maybe five tombstones in one family there from within a week's period of time, and go to another section and it's all the same. And you can see where all these children would die under age five and so on. And if you talk to grandparents and that, they always talk about brothers and sisters that died in infancy. And it's really quite rare now, and that's why the life expectancy has gone up so much. It's mainly taking care of the younger children.
He attributes death in children to an amazing cause. He says death in children is the consequence of too frequently changing the dress of children. The electricity passing from the body fills the clothes and every change makes a new draft in the upon the electric fluid. Hence, in children, a too frequent change tends to exhaust the electricity, disease ensues, and the child dies. A gentleman whose wife paid the greatest attention to their children, frequently bathing them and changing their dress, lost 4 or 5 in succession.
The interesting thing is the gentleman lost it.
Well, I'm sure all of you remember polio. I know when my children were small before the vaccine, why they closed theaters and parks and swimming pools, all under the assumption that you could, so we're not so far removed from it.
No, I can remember those days well.
We were forbidden to eat the ends of bananas because they were sure that that was where the polio germ was. When you pulled it off the, you know, the stalk. Why live out there? Civilized. There aren't any Indians there anymore.
Do you suppose that 150 years from now there will be a book on today's medicine that will be read for the group anywhere with the similarity and laughter?
I'm sure there will be. I'm sure there will be. I have faith.
When I entered my fifth decade, a psychologist friend of mine gave me 500 dolomite pills. With what regularity should I be consuming these?
Anybody want to answer that question? This is one of my pet peeve areas. We talked about it a little bit the other night with vitamin C and everything. It was vitamin E. Went from a $3 million a year industry into a $300 million industry in just a few years with all of the many things that it's cured. And I think I've heard it's cured for almost every disease that's ever been known to modern man. I've heard from my patients that are using it. So. There's a lot of these things. Dolomite is in there, and there are a lot of things I think we could all think that people are taking.
But if disease is 75% in the head, what difference does it make if you take it if you believe it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it is. I think it is a placebo, and if you're feeling better, I'm not gonna gripe with it. The only thing that bothers me about it is these same people. A lot of people that are taking these things also gripe about what they have to pay for penicillin, or pay for some of the modern drugs that I know really have made a tremendous difference in the longevity of people. You know. And yet they'll go down and they'll spend $5, $6 for 100 of some kind of vitamin pill, and they'll go to the pharmacy and pay $3, $4, $5 for a prescription for penicillin and gripe in their breath about how the pharmaceutical industry is ripping them off and what the tremendous cost of medicine is today. That's the only thing that really bothers me about it.
You're taking some of these fancy vitamins, just watch when you go to the bathroom and see what the color is and where your vitamin is going. It's right down the drain.
The right exercise.
Aren't these supposed to be done before breakfast every morning for the rest of the week?
What are supposed to be done?
The exercises you gave us?
Well, I think those are before bed, but that doesn't make sense, does it? That's no.
Take the quart of water.
Watch out, housekeeper.
The line that was used by Martin Heineken, who's a distinguished, dignified, retired theologian of the Lutheran Church in America, he used it last year at our Synod Convention here about, and he was talking about elderly and some of the social statements being developed with regard to the elderly, and about the three men who were in the nursing home comparing symptoms. The one man was having a terrible time with his bladder emptying. He simply couldn't get it to empty. It's a great strain for a great pound. And another man is having great difficulty with his bowels, and going great length describing that. And this third man is saying, he said, "No, I simply," he says, "I guess I must not have any difficulty at all." He said, "I'm just as regular as clockwork." He said, "Every morning at 7:30, he said, "my bladder empties just without any difficulty, and by 8 o'clock, my bowels have emptied. My only difficulty is I never wake up until 8:30.
Does anybody remember the poultice? I guess
yes.
That's the way it's poultice. Here's instructions on making a bread poultice. It is well for a mother to know how to make a white bread poultice. Scald the basin, for you can never make a good poultice unless you have perfect boiling water. Then throw in coarsely crumbled bread and cover with a plate. When the bread is soaked up as much water as it will imbibe, drain off the remaining water, and there will be a light pulp left. Spread it a third of an inch thick on folded linen and apply. It may be said that this poultice will be very inconvenient if there's no lard in it, for it will soon get dry. But this is the very thing you want. It can easily be moistened by dropping warm water on it, while a greasy poultice will be moist but not wet." And what were poultices used for? They were thought to draw out the evil humors or the problems in the inside the body as they were applied.
Well, if you had a sliver or something and they put it on, they would pull it out and thought it would.
Lard and turpentine made a good one.
Lard and turpentine?
Yeah. I read something about smallpox a couple hundred years ago. You were to cover the body completely with honey, and if you survived, you wouldn't have any scars.
There are lots of medical uses for good old salt, and I'm going to read the whole thing. Common salt is one of the most abundant productions of nature. Tonic, purgative, and externally stimulant. It is administered in some cases of dyspepsia and worms, in large doses to check hemorrhage or bleeding from the stomach, lungs, and bowels, used as an ingredient in clysters. Anyone know what that is? Clysters? As a fomentation in bruises, and dissolved in water as a stimulating bath. In many cases of disordered, someone know what it is? No?
I bet the priests were.
Everybody get that?
Well,
Christ
is the injection of fluid into soft tissues.
No, this is
to replace fluid, and so our clyster is probably the fluid that's used to replace it. It used to be enough before intravenous fluids were invented. That was the method to replace fluids if somebody couldn't drink.
Oh, okay.
It's spelled C-L-Y-S-T-E-R,
right.
Clyster.
Yeah. Clyster,
yeah.
The process of doing that.
Hadn't thought about it.
In many cases of disordered stomach, a teaspoonful of salt is a certain cure. In the violent internal pain termed colic, a teaspoonful of salt dissolved in half a teacup full of cold water, taken as soon as possible, is one of the most effectual and speedy remedies known, with a short nap immediately after. The same will revive a person who seems almost dead from receiving a heavy fall. In an apoplectic fit, no time should be lost in pouring down salt water, if sufficient sensibility remain to allow of swallowing. If not, the head must be sponged with cold water until the senses return, when salt will completely restore the patient from the lethargy. If he's smart, he won't recover. In a fit, the feet should be placed in warm salt water with mustard added, and the legs briskly rubbed, all bandages removed from the neck, where they came from. and the person placed in a cool apartment if possible. In cases of severe bleeding at the lungs, and when other remedies have failed, Dr. Rush found that 2 teaspoonsful of salt completely stayed the blood. It should be eaten dry. In toothache, warm salt and water held to the part will relieve in many cases. If the gums be affected, wash the mouth with brine. If the teeth be covered with tartar, wash them twice a day with salt water. In swelled neck, wash the part with brine and drink it also twice a day until cured. Salt water expels worms. If used in the food moderately, it aids digestion. But too much salt meat is injurious. Salt is a most valuable remedy and may be relied upon in croup. The dose is a teaspoonful mixed with a tablespoonful of honey and given freely. In bowel diseases, especially dysentery, cholera, and cholera morbus, salt is one of the best remedies known. In such cases, it is to be mixed with vinegar and warm water. And if there is any sickness at the stomach, as in cholera, add also a teaspoonful of ground black or cayenne pepper to a tumblerful of the liquid to be taken freely. One wonders why he wrote a book of this size if 1 teaspoon of salt will do all that.
What was Epsom salt used for?
Epsom salt was a purgative.
We had a college nurse that gave all the time.
We didn't dare go there because we always got Epsom salt.
Well, today they use normal saline. If a bleeding ulcer comes in, you put an NG tube down and irrigate with ice. Normal saline, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's bleeding.
But it's not the same thing.
No, but I'm a good principle.
Yeah. Epsom salts was basically magnesium sulfate. Isn't that right? And it's what we call a supersaturated solution, and has a tendency to draw fluid out of things. And most of us grew up with the fact that when we turned our ankle, we were supposed to soak our foot in Epsom salts right away. Or if we sprained our wrist, then we were supposed to do that.
Ever get a bug in your ear? Mm-hmm. There's a remedy for bug in your ear.
Literally a bug.
Dr. B.F. Kinsley, not Kinsey, USA, relates a number of cases where soldiers sleeping on the planes have come to him to have bugs removed from their ears. Accidentally, he discovered that by holding a lighted candle near the ear, the insects would leave at once the cavity and come forth. The patient should be in the dark when this is done.
Many of you probably don't realize it, but a lot of these exotic teas that we've been having with our lunches and dinners were also medicine in former days. Well, I think we had peppermint tea today, didn't we? Yesterday. I thought I'd read you a little bit about it. The leaves are for the part most used, though the whole herb is medicinal. It is a powerful and agreeable aromatic stimulant, very diffuse and penetrating, and also is carmine active, antispasmodic, and antiemetic. Used as a stimulant to promote perspiration, to relieve flatulent colic and gripping pain, especially in combination with gripping cathartic medicines and to allay or prevent nausea and sickness of the stomach. It is also good in cramps and spasms of the stomach, hysterical affections, in bowel complaints of children, and to render other medicines more agreeable.
Are any of the herb teas of any value?
Is chamomile in
there? Yeah, chamomile is in here.
It always tastes like chicken mash to me, but...
Your question is, I'm not aware of any use of the herb teas nowadays for anything, but maybe somebody else is.
Another thing that they believed in a great deal was bathing properly. And in Maiden, Wife, and Mother, they have several baths that they recommend for beauty and health. And these were to be sort of a daily routine. One was the foot bath, and it has some neat pictures with it, but maybe you can come afterward and look at some of the illustrations in these books. Another thing, another type of bath was to dampen a sheet completely with either hot or cold water, completely wrap the body in it and lie on the bed for, you know, like an hour. And you could put hot water bottles around the edges to keep yourself warm. Then they believed in a spray bath. That was supposed to be very invigorating, and but they didn't have showers in those days, so in the illustration it shows the maid hosing down the lady. They had nasal baths. Nasal baths were supposed to be used once a day to keep, you know, everything clear out. And it looks like an enema bag, and it, you know, it just held up the nose and drained into a bowl. Ordinary baths, I suppose, were maybe one, you know, Saturday night affair, and that was it. So they had to make good use of the water in small amounts, I suppose, during the week.
Did you ever have a Japanese bath?
Okay, what's a Japanese bath?
Well, they have different kind of bathtubs than what we did. We bathed in several Japanese bathtubs over there in several Japanese homes, and the whole family uses the same water.
I just like the jacuzzi we have.
Their bathtubs are about that big. They're about a yard square, and you get in them. You sit in them, and it goes up to here, and I am much bigger than what the Japanese ordinarily are, and so they had the water about that far from the top. Unfortunately, it was a tiled floor, because when I got in, the bathtub overflowed. It's all right, it goes down the drain.
Oh, scum went off that way.
Well, there's still on it, yeah.
You wash and get completely clean before you get into a Japanese bathtub. Yeah. You have another room where you take off all your clothes, and you wash thoroughly with soap, and then you rinse all that off, and then you get in the bathtub. Because a bathtub in Japan, you're not intended to go there to get clean. You are there for one of three purposes, either to get warm, or to meditate, or to have it go around like the jacuzzi does. It's a medicinal thing. And everybody in the house uses the same water. It's very, very hot, but it comes in one place, and then it's a circulating thing, and it goes back through a heater, and comes back in again. Now, we have had these Japanese teachers, in our home, so they realize that the American woman is a little bit, you know, she gets a few things better than what the men do. I hate to admit that, but then it's true, you know, we're all a bunch of baby brats, we American women. So when I got to their house, ordinarily, the man of the house would have bathed first, my husband next, all of the children, then me, and then the wife. But since they had been in America, I got to bathe first, then my husband, then her husband, then the kids, then the Japanese wife. But we had climbed Mount Fuji that day, and we were very cold. It was a dreadfully cold, rainy day, and that was the most relaxing thing, to just get in there and let this water just go all over you, you know, and you were just as nice and warm, and you felt like sitting there all night. But when you realized that the whole family was going to use this whole, this same tub and the same water, you felt like, you know, you should just stay a little while. it was very interesting, and the people have said, you know, oh, how filthy. It's not really any filthier than getting into a bathtub when we are filthy and sitting there in that water with all the filth swimming around in it. You're clean before you ever get into a Japanese bathtub.
Well, the newest thing in America is hot tubs where you all get in together.
Well,
same principle. We'll end the session with chamomile, per request. It says chamomile flowers is an excellent bitter tonic, also a carminative and antispasmodic, and in large doses an emetic. A tea or warm infusion is therefore good to aid the action of emesis. A cold infusion of the flowers taken in moderate doses is good for dyspepsia and weak, debilitating conditions of the stomach, also for recovery from typhoid and intermittent fevers. They are also good as a strengthening remedy in cases of female weakness, either in the cold infusion or in the form of wine bitters. The oil of chamomile, which can readily be had at drugstores, is considered a good remedy in colic, cramp in the stomach, hysteria, and dysmenorrhea.
It's those two together, that's
important. I recently read that people with hay fever should not drink that.
Oh, really? Anyway, medicine has made a little bit of progress since these days back here. And we thank you for coming.
Thank you.